Hi, everybody. Bob Claster here, and I'm your host for Funny Stuff, half an hour of comedy heard every Friday night here on KCRW. And tonight we're going to discuss the election. It's that time again. Every 4 years, that other kind of comedy comes to town. Actually, I think this time it's been more of a game show than a comedy. And it's actually not really as funny as one would like it to be. It's also, I think, sort of sad that the state of political satire is such that there really hasn't been any very good political humor that's come out of this election, apart from the humor inherent in it. At any rate, we're going to look back on some earlier political humor and discuss some of the various aspects of a political campaign. Well before a politician even declares for office, the issue arises where he has to worry about his image. And discussing that, we have Bob Newhart discussing the image makers dealing with Abraham Lincoln.
This is a telephone conversation between Abe and his press agent just before Gettysburg. Hi, Abe, sweetheart, how are you, kid? How's Gettysburg? Sort of a drag, huh? Well, Abe, you know them small Pennsylvania towns. You seen one, you seen them all. Right. Listen, Abe, I got the note. What's the problem? You're thinking of shaving it off. Abe, don't you see that's part of the image? Right, with the shawl and the stovepipe at the string tie. You don't have the shawl. Where's the shawl, Abe? You left it in Washington. What are you wearing, Abe? A sort of cardigan? Abe, don't you see that doesn't fit with the string tie and the beard? Abe, would you leave the beard on and get the shawl, huh? All right, now what's this about Grant? You're getting a lot of complaints on Grant's drinking, huh? Abe, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't see the problem. I mean, you knew he was a lush when you pointed him, you see that? You're gag writers. Yeah, you're gag writers here. You want to come back with something funny, huh? Maybe an anecdote about a town drunk. Well, I can't promise anything, Abe. I'll get him working on it. Abe, you got the speech. Abe, you haven't changed the speech, have you? Abe, what do you change the speeches for? A couple minor changes, I'll bet. All right, what are they? You what? You typed it. Abe, how many times have we told you on the backs of envelopes? I understand it's harder to read that way, Abe, but it looks like you wrote it on the train coming down or something like that. Abe, could you do this? Could you memorize it and then put it on the backs of the envelopes? We're getting a lot of play in the press on that. How are the envelopes holding out? You could stand another box. All right, that's something. All right, what else, Abe? You change 87 to 87? I understand you need the same thing, Abe. Well, Abe, that's meant to be a grabber. Abe, we test marketed that in an Erie, and they went out of their minds about it. Well, Abe, it's sort of like Mark Anthony saying, friends, Romans, countrymen, I've got something I want to tell you. You see what I mean, Abe? What else? People will little note nor long remember. Abe, what could possibly be wrong with that? They'll remember it. Abe, they'll remember it. It's the old humble bit. You can't say it's a great speech. I think everybody's going to remember it, Abe. You come off a braggart, don't you see that? Hey, Abe, do the speech the way Charlie wrote it, would you? The inaugural address swung, didn't it? All right, anything else? You talk to some newspaper men. Abe, I wish you wouldn't talk to newspaper men. Why do you always put your foot in? No, that's just what I mean, Abe. No. You were a rail splitter, then an attorney. Abe, it doesn't make any sense that way. I mean, you wouldn't give up your law practice to become a rail splitter, don't you? Would you read the biog, Abe? You'll save a lot of trouble on this end. Abe, listen, before I forget, the manufacturer is coming out with the Abe Lincoln t-shirt on Tuesday. Could you work that into the address somewhere, Abe? Play it by ear, whatever you can do. Abe, have you got a pencil and paper there? Would you take this down? You can fool all of the people some of the time, and some of the people all of the time. But you can't fool all the people all the time. Well, you keep doing it differently, Abe. The last quote I got was, you can fool all the people all the time, and you... Abe, hold on. They come up with a thing on Grant. Right. Good. Yeah, all beautiful. Abe, listen to this. They got a beautiful squelch on Grant. Right. The next time they bug you about Grant's drinking, right, you tell them you're going to find out what brand he drinks and send a case of it to all your other generals. No. It's like the brand was the reason he won. No. Abe, use it. It's fun. Trust me on this. Saturday night. Oh, Abe, I'm sorry. I'm gonna be in New York Saturday night. A bridge party at the White House. Oh, Abe, I'd love to make it. How about Seward? You try him. He'll be out of town too, huh? Oh, that's a, you and what's your name? Be home alone. Mary, be home alone. Listen, Abe, why don't you take in a play? I'll be talking to you. Go on.
Now, once the image problems are taken care of, the next step for our candidate is to deny, of course, that he intends to become a candidate. And here's one of the great denials. This is from Pat Paulson. Pat Paulson, as those of you who are probably 30 or older may recall, was a comedian who, I'm sure he still is a comedian, who was a regular on the old Smothers Brothers show, and he would deliver the editorials. And they decided to run him for president. And here's what happened when he decided to face head-on the issue as to whether or not he was going to be a political candidate.
In view of the editorial you gave on congressional ethics, I thought it might be a good time to ask you about a rumor that's been circulating around. Now, this is completely off the record, and you can answer me quite honestly. Mm-hmm. But I've read and I've heard from several people that you're considering running for public office. Now, is this true?
Absolutely not.
There's been a lot of talk, and you are involved in public affairs, so I thought perhaps it might be true.
Well, a great many of my friends and my associates and my fellow Americans have been urging me to run for office, but what office I'm not at liberty to say at this time. Uh-huh. Therefore, I wish to state that with regard to the presidency of the United States, I will not run if nominated, and if I'm elected, I will not serve.
That's sure going to disappoint a lot of people around the country, I know that.
Well, what people would you be referring to?
Well, quite frankly, the show's been starting to get a lot of letters from clubs that are springing up around the country that are advocating Pat Paulson for president.
Let me say this about that. I have no connection with my clubs throughout the country. They're nothing more than small groups of unsolicited, over-enthusiastic supporters of a great man.
Then you actually have nothing to do with these clubs at all.
Well, not only do I have nothing to do with them, I've really tried to dissuade these people from backing me. I've spent large sums of the money, these clubs. I've traveled around the clubs in the various parts of the country. I've met these people face to face, and I've told them that I'm not interested in being president.
Well, I guess that settles that then. So
I certainly hope so, and I appreciate this opportunity so early in my campaign to make my position clear.
And once your position is clear, it's time to go out on the stump and make speeches. And here, with a British angle on some of those speeches, is Peter Sellers.
My friends, in the light of present-day developments, let me say right away that I do not regard existing conditions lightly. On the contrary, I have always regarded them as subjects of the gravest responsibility, and shall ever continue to do so. Indeed, I will even go further and state quite categorically that I am more than sensible of the definition of the precise issues which are at this very moment concerning us all. We must build, but we must build surely. Let me say just this. If any part of what I am saying is challenged, then I am more than ready to meet such a challenge. For I have no doubt whatsoever that whatever I may have said in the past, or what I am saying now, is the exact, literal, and absolute truth as to the state of the case. I put it to you that this is not the time for vague promises of better things to come.
Good.
For if I were to convey to you a spirit of false optimism, then I should be neither fair to you nor true to myself. But does this mean, I hear you cry, that we can no longer look forward to the future that is to come? Certainly not.
What about the workers?
What about the workers indeed, sir? Grasp, I beseech you, with both hands. I'm so sorry, I beg your pardon, madam. The opportunities that are offered. Let us assume a bold front and go forward together. Let us carry the fight against ignorance to the far corners of the earth. Because it is a fight which concerns us all. And now finally, my friends, in conclusion, let me say just this.
This is Broadcast Headquarters, and we now have word that the convention has selected their presidential nominee. The nominee is about to make his acceptance speech and will be introduced by the party chairman, so take it away, Convention Hall.
Ladies and gentlemen, occasionally in history a man comes along who is dedicated to the ideals of the human race. A man not only dedicated, but endowed with the gifts of statesmanship, a brilliant intellect, and the zeal for justice that gives man a new dimension of dignity. I give you such a man, the man our great party has chosen to be its standard bearer. The next president of the United States, Mr. Daniel Douglas Ditto!
I can't believe it. I just can't believe that you people nominated me for president. What did you have in mind? What were you doing? I wouldn't make a decent paperweight. Holy mackerel. Well, what can I tell you other than I have a prepared speech here? Fellow Americans, we are engaged in a great war for peace. We are going forward with our banners unfurled, with our swords put away, but by the same token, at our side, or sides. I don't need this anymore. I'm speaking now directly from my heart. We have a fine country, not only a fine country, but a fine bunch of folks. Sure, we've got problems, but we can solve those, can't we, gang? As you can well understand, in this political game, everybody must have a partner. I chose my partner in college. And here she is tonight.
This is so exciting, and particularly since we were this far away from getting a divorce.
Sorry you told him that, Puffy. Puffy and I were drinking while we were watching from our hotel room, weren't we, Puff?
Yeah.
Let's tell him. Let's level with him. We were gassed, huh? Weren't we squeezing one another and kissing, cutting up?
I thought we
were... The kids all there, boy, throwing stuff out of the windows. Let's level with him. Let's let him in on what we were doing. Not just sitting there dignified in a tuxedo. What the hell? How did we know in our wildest moments that we'd be Mr. and Mrs. President? Holy God. But here we are. And my old friend, Alan Gooleby, been my campaign manager. God bless you, Alan.
Thank you, Daniel. And you know, before I became your manager, I was a newspaper man.
Yes.
And I would be a little remiss if I didn't take advantage now to be the first man to interview you as the presidential candidate, you and the missus.
I wouldn't want it any other way.
Well, Deborah?
Call her Puffy.
Puffy,
yes,
are
do.
You concerned at all that there might be a war during your husband's 4 years?
Oh, not at all. No, actually, we don't believe in war of any kind because, let's face it, hostility is no longer chic.
I see. Well, now, how do you plan to help your husband during the campaign, Puffy?
Well, in every possible way I can. I am reminded of one of my favorite quotes.
God bless you, Puffy.
Whither he goest, I will lead the way.
Thank you, Puffy. Tell us, Dan.
Her family has a fortune.
Tell us. Dan, I don't like to throw you a curve here in front of the convention, but to get this nomination, did you make a few enemies? Did you have to step on a few people, Dan?
Almost a nation.
Well, Daniel Douglas Diddle, tell me, Dan, now that you're the nominee, you've been selected, the party has made their call, I suppose you're ready now to go out there and hit that long, tough campaign trail.
On the contrary. No, I'm going to level with you, and I'm going to level with the people. You remember that dinner back in Detroit?
Very successful. $200 a plate.
Well, we're going to take all that money and go on a world cruise.
People are beginning to recognize and appreciate my position on the important issues of this campaign. On Vietnam, for example, I have repeatedly warned that we must avoid the extremists. Those who say we should just pull out, those who say we should escalate and get into North Vietnam. Between these two extreme solutions, there is obviously a middle ground. And I maintain that we should avoid either extreme. Just continue messing around like we have been.
And that, of course, was Pat Paulson again. And after the first Pat Paulson piece, we heard Jonathan Winters from an album entitled Whistle Stopping with Jonathan Winters, and then one more brief little Pat Paulson piece. And then, of course, once all the speeches are done, it's time for the election night coverage. And once again, with a British perspective on how very silly the election night coverage can be, here they are, Monty Python's Flying Circus.
And welcome to Election Night Special. There's tremendous excitement here at the moment as we should be getting the first results through any moment now. We're not quite sure where it'll be from. It might be from Leicester or from West Byfleet. The polling's been quite heavy in both areas. Oh, and I'm just getting a buzzing noise in my left ear. And now let's go straight over to Leicester.
And it's a straight fight here at Leicester, and we're expecting the result any moment now. There with the returning officer is Arthur Smith, the sensible candidate, and next to him is Jethro Q. Walrus Titty, the silly candidate with his agent and his silly wife.
Here is the result for Leicester. Arthur J. Smith.
Sensible party.
30,612. Jethro Q. Bun Wacket Buzzard Stubble and Boot Walrus Titty.
Silly party.
33,108.
Well, there you have it, the first result of the election there, and the silly party have held Leicester Norman.
Well, pretty much as I predicted, except that the silly party won. I think this is largely due to the number of votes cast,
quite,
Gerald.
Quite. Well, there's a big swing here to the silly party, but how big a swing, I'm not going to tell you.
I think one should point out here that in this constituency, since the last election, a lot of very silly people have moved into new housing estates, with the result that a lot of sensible voters have moved further down the road, the other side of number 29.
Well, I can't add anything to that, Colin.
Can I just say this is the first time I've been on television?
No, I'm sorry, there isn't time. We're just going straight over to Luton.
Well, here at Luton, it's a three-cornered contest between, from left to right, Alan Jones, sensible party, Tarquin Fintim Limbim, Limbim Bim Bim Bim, Bus Stop for Tang Olay Biscuit Barrel, silly party, and Kevin Phillips Bong, who is running on the slightly silly ticket. And here's the result.
Alan Jones.
Sensible.
9,112. Kevin Phillips Bong.
Slightly silly.
Not. Tarquin Fintin Linbin Wimbim Limbim Bus Stop for Tang Olay Biscuit Barrel.
Silly.
12,441.
Well, there you have it, the first result of the election there as the silly party take Luton Normally.
Well, this is a very significant result. Luton Normally, a very sensible constituency with a high proportion of people who aren't a bit silly, has gone completely gaga.
And we just heard that James Gilbert has with him the winning silly candidate at Luton.
Tarquin, are you pleased with this result?
Oh, yes, me old beauty, I should say so.
Do we have the swing at Luton?
No.
Right, well, I can't add anything to that, Colin.
Can I just say that this is the second time I've been on television?
No, I'm sorry, there isn't time. We're just about to get another result.
And this one is from Harpenden South East. A very interesting constituency, this. In addition to the official silly candidate, there is an unofficial, very silly candidate in the slab of concrete. And he could well split the silly vote here at Harpenden South East.
Mrs. Elsie Zip.
Silly.
26,317. Jeanette Walker.
Sensible.
26,318.
That is very close.
Malcolm Peter Bryan Telescope, Adrian Blackpool Rock Stoat Gobbler, John Raw Vegetable, Norman Michael, Edward, Jupiter, Thomas Moo will keep a welcome in. William, raindrops keep falling on my. Don't sleep in the subway. Smith.
Very silly.
Two.
Well, there you have it. A sensible gain there at Harpenden with the silly vote being split.
And we've just heard from Luton that Tony Stratton-Smith has with him there the unsuccessful, slightly silly candidate, Kevin Phillips Bong.
Kevin Phillips Bong. You polled no votes at all. Not a sausage. Bugger all. Are you at all disappointed with this performance?
Not at all. As I always say, climb every mountain, ford every stream, follow every byway, till you find your dream. A dream that will last. All the love you can give, every day of your life, for as long as you live.
All together now!
Climb every mountain.
Kevin Phillips Bong there. Norman!
And, oh,
shut up.
Can I just say I've just heard from Luton that my aunt is ill. Possibly gastroenteritis, possibly just catarrh. Gerald.
Right, Colin?
Can I just say he'll never appear on television again?
No, I'm sorry, there isn't time, because we have to bring up another, a few results you may have missed. A little pink pussycat has taken Barrow in Furness. That's a gain from the Liberals there. Rastus Odinga Oginga has taken Wolverhampton Southwest. That's Enoch Powell's old constituency. An important gain there for Darkie Power. Arthur Negus has held Bristol. That's not a result, that's just a bit of gossip. Sir Alec Douglas Hume has taken Oldham for the Stone Dead Party. And a small piece of putty about that big, a cheese mechanic from Dunbar, and two frogs, one called Kipper and the other one not, have all gone in Blackpool Central. And so it's beginning to look like a silly landslide when the prospect of 5 more years of silly government facing us. We... Oh, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm bored.
He's right, you know. It is a bloody waste of time.
Absolute waste.
I'm going back to gynecology. Is that what...
I have conducted my campaign thus far in the true American political tradition. I lied about my intention to run. I have been consistently vague on all the issues. But this apparently has not been enough. Therefore, I promise now, my fellow Americans, that I will continue to make promises that I will be unable to fulfill.
And that was Pat Paulson with his victory speech, that being, of course, the last phase of the election process. And before that, we heard Monty Python live at Drury Lane in England with their election special. And that's going to have to wrap up our election special. This is your host, Bob Claster, reminding you to vote. It's a week from Tuesday, and don't forget to get out there and do it. And let's see, what else is there? I'll continue to remind you to watch the Bill Cosby Show, because they have continued to be wonderful, as have the SCTV Network reruns that are on every weeknight at 11 on Channel 9. It's amazing the number of characters and situations that they created during the run of that show, and the reruns are just about as much fun as they were the first time around, and the best thing is that they're not on at 2 o'clock in the morning. So, that's about it. Let me see, the address is Bob Claster with a C, KCRW, 1900 Pico Boulevard, Santa Monica, California, 90405, for any questions, comments, criticisms, whatever. And until next week, when we will be rebroadcasting the first half of the Hour with Tom Lehrer that apparently a lot of you haven't heard, because I keep getting letters to broadcast it. This is your host, Bob Claster, reminding you to always keep that sense of humor well exercised, because you never know when you're going to need it. Good night, everybody.